Chapter 19. The Battle of the Cerberan Bridge. Brunner and Catti Bree stood on the bank of the Cerberan, watching the approach of a pair of dwarves, male and female, they hardly expected to see at this time and in this place.
"Bah! But you didn't think we'd be missing all the fun, did ye?"
Athrogate asked when he bounded up to them beside Ambergris.
"Didn't know what to think about yourself," Brunner replied. "Ain't seen ye in a few days, eh? And yourself," he said to Amber. "Why aren't ye with King Harnoth and your monk friend?"
"Drizzt is with Brother Affa Frenfear," Amber answered. "Aye, and we'll be seeing them soon, don't ye doubt."
Catti Bree and Brunner exchanged curious looks.
"Aye, and your boys Wulfgar and Regis been fighting already this day, south where the Cerberan catches the Rovin,"
Athrogate explained. "How can you know that?" a concern Catti Bree demanded. But she held up her hand, dismissing her own question, and reminding herself of this one's associate, after all.
"So I'm hearing the plan and laughing all the while," said Athrogate. "Conorad's out, and the smoke's rising." "And King Emerus is across the river," said Brunner, pointing to the west and the main dwarf force from Citadel Felbar,
who were even then preparing their sweep to the south in support of the boys breaking free from Mithril Hall.
"And yourself and your boys," Athrogate started.
"And girls,"
Ambergris put in, and she tossed a wink to Catti Bree.
"Aye, all of them," Athrogate agreed. "You're to cut the battle in half, are ye, and to hold that point?"
He looked at Brunner, smile beaming, and all of a sudden he began a riotous laugh.
"Wah-ha-ha," he roared. "Darned if it ain't the craziest plan I've e'er heard."
"And yet you are here," Catti Bree said dryly.
"Wouldn't miss it for all the ale in Waterdeep,"
the black-bearded dwarf howled.
"So, you got a place for Athrogate and Amber Grisolo Maul on your boat, good King Brunner?"
Brunner and Catti Bree looked to each other again and shrugged. What did they have to lose, after all? For neither doubted the fighting prowess of this pair, particularly Athrogate and those devastating morning stars he swung around with such ease and aplomb. Their job here with his force of 100 gutbusters was to keep the orcs in the large encampment on the eastern side of the Cerberan Bridge from joining in the fight in front of Mithril Hall on the western bank. Who better to hold a choke point than Athrogate, a dwarf as strong as a giant and more ferocious than a cornered wolverine?
"There they go,"
Amber said, drawing their attention back across the river, where King Emerus and his army began their charge.
"Then here we go,"
said Brunner, and he called to Bungalow Thump to begin their most unusual foray. With a determined nod, Brunner led his three companions to the lead boat. General Dagnabbit looked around hopefully at the progress her charges had made in breaking free of Mithril Hall. The diversion had worked perfectly, the fiery carts and bombs driving back the orcs and creating enough confusion for Dagnabbit to get most of her shield dwarves out of the choke point of Mithril Hall's eastern gate and into some defensive formations at least. They had broken free, but surely it was to be a temporary and costly thing.
"They'll be here,"
King Conorad said to her, moving to her side and nodding hopefully. Dagnabbit nodded back, but her eyes remained on the front lines where the orc force, so clearly superior to her own, was regrouping, and to the north, where the sounds of a second enemy force could be heard roaring around the mountain, and to the Cerberan Bridge, where already the lead orc runners from the vast encampments of the eastern bank were making their appearance on the field.
"They better be,"
she said to her king and friend. The lines wavered back and forth, dwarves and orcs falling to stone that was soaked under pools of blood. Then came a roar from the north, and King Conorad, General Dagnabbit, and the other dwarves looked up the western bank of the Cerberan, as did the orcs, and they were the ones who began to cheer at the sight of their reinforcing brethren. But a second roar overwhelmed the first, drawing the attention of the combatants again, and this time the dwarves of Mithril Hall were the ones who knew hope. A second dwarven army had come, the shield dwarves charging down behind the orcs from the northern encampment, slicing into their ranks. The fight for the second front was on in full. Dagnabbit and Conorad retreated to a higher vantage point where they could oversee the two fronts, and it didn't take long for the general of Mithril Hall to inform King Conorad that the arrival of King Emerus and his boys wouldn't be enough.
"That's the one camp from the north," she explained. "The small one. The bigger group will be along soon enough, Smeagass."
"If them orcs are even needin' it," King Conorad said, looking then to the Cerbran Bridge, its wide lane thick with orc reinforcements swarming in from the east. Beyond the bridge in the eastern fields came a line of monsters that extended out of Conorad's sight, with ogres and giants and goblins rushing eagerly for the battle. That line probably stretched all the way to Felbar, he realized. So Conorad was thinking that they would need to retreat back into Mithril Hall, and they were ready for that contingency. He looked to the fight in the north.
"Find us a way to bring them boys from Felbar in aside us," he instructed Dagnabbit, who was already doing exactly that. "King Brunner's got to be in that bunch. Morit didn't watch over him. We'll put a sting on the dogs this day, don't ye doubt, but we're not to fight to the last."
General Dagnabbit wanted to argue, but she could not. They wouldn't win with the influx from the Cerbran Bridge, and if the much larger orc force they knew to be farther north came sweeping down, the dwarven force in the north would be quickly surrounded and obliterated. She was about to suggest a clever strike to the north, to link with the dwarves up there and bring them fast to Mithril Hall. But her budding plan fell apart a moment later when still more horns began to blow, and a flotilla appeared in the river, a score of small boats, elven boats, sweeping downstream for the bridge. On the center and lead boat of that flotilla stood King Brunner Battlehammer, feet spread wide, hands on strong hips, chin tilted defiantly at the enemy standing on the Cerbran Bridge. Athrogate and Ambergree flanked him, with Catti Bree behind, her eyes already closed as she fell into her spellcasting, calling deep into the elemental powers of her magical ring, following the connection to a place of fire. Brunner stood rock solid at the prow, even as the missiles began to rain down at them. He drew his axe and pulled his shield off his back, and banged his axe on his shield with a drum-like cadence while he sang an old dwarven battle song, one at once rousing and mournful.
"We speak with hammer, axe, and maul. We call to gods in Mordin's hall. We stand our ground, await our fall, for then we'll know the grandest feast, with poking beard and upraised chin, for though we fall, the clan she'll win, to die this day for kith and kin, but kill the ugly goblin beast, pile heavy the stones to warm me bones."
Spears and arrows reached for them from the river's eastern bank, monsters running to pace them so they could continue their reign. The lines of orcs crossing the Cerbran Bridge paused in their charge for the fight at Mithril Hall's door, and instead turned their war whoops and their sights on the flotilla of dwarves being delivered to them where they stood. They too bent back their bows and let fly their spears and javelins. Those boats nearest the eastern bank took the brunt of the missile barrage, and dwarves growled and cried out, and dwarves fell writhing in pain, or fell into the cold waters to be swept away, or fell dead. Behind Brunner, Athrogate glanced over at Amber, neither of them smiling any longer. They still had a long way to go, and under this rain of missiles, would any be alive by the time they threw their grapnels? But Brunner held his place and sang all the louder, and many of the gutbusters took up the cadence, clanging their spiked gauntlets together. Up came Brunner's shield, picking off an arrow aimed for his face, and a second arrow sank deeply into it as he brought it back in front of him. The red-bearded dwarf didn't blink. Athrogate looked to Catti Bree.
"Don't ye miss, girl," he whispered,
though he was sure she couldn't even hear him, so far into her trance was she.
"Wouldn't that be the wreck of it?"
Amber agreed, and Athrogate chuckled, or started to, until an ogre-thrown rock cracked him in the chest and sent him down hard in the boat. Sitting, the black-bearded dwarf shook his head so fiercely that his lips flapped loudly. He jumped to his feet and hoisted the rock, then turned to the east and heaved it with all his considerable, magically enhanced giant strength. The heavy missile flew faster and farther than the ogre's throw, to the surprise and demise of one ugly orc, who went flying away under the heavy strike. Atherogate started to call out his fine throw, but Amber's sudden intake of breath brought his attention back to the south, to the bridge. And Atherogate, too, sucked in his breath and saw their certain doom. The monsters on the bridge had organized now, with ogres hoisting heavy spiked logs.
"This is gonna hurt," Atherogate whispered.
The lead boats, including their boat, were nearing the shadows of that bridge now. But Brunner was still singing, still banging his shield, which was now holding 3 broken arrows, with his many notched axe. He didn't shy away, didn't flinch, he just sang, now his voice as much a growl as a throaty baritone. They drifted closer. A pair of particularly ugly ogres lifted a spiked log up high.
"Oh, this is gonna hurt," Atherogate said.
And he was right, for Catty Bree's spell was cast then, a line of fire running the length of the bridge, igniting spiked logs, igniting bows and spears, igniting orcs and ogres. Brunner stopped banging his shield and grabbed his axe in his shield arm before he lifted a cracked silver horn to his lips and croaked a discordant note. The dwarf reached down with his free arm and lifted a grapnel secured to a thick rope. He let it out a bit and set it spinning, then sent it flying up high for the bridge's stone rail. Over it went and into the flames, but Brunner yanked it back quickly, before the fires could catch, pulling the grapnel tight against the wall. He was the first out of the boats, slinging his shield and axe and leaping high on the rope, the strength of Clangadin coursing through his muscled arms. Up he went, hand over hand, climbing with ease and with amazing speed, easily outpacing those dwarves on the other boats who were climbing ropes of their own. Even as Brunner went over the stone wall, Catty Bree's wall of fire came down. But from it had come a monstrous fire elemental, and that magical beast was already into the battle, slamming an ogre with its fiery fist, sending the brute tumbling. Atherogate was soon up to the bridge rail, pulling himself over quickly, desperate to join Brunner, who by then was single-handedly holding back a surging swarm of orcs. No, not single-handedly, Atherogate realized. The berserker specter of Thibbledorf Puent was there, warp-stepping from one side to the other, swatting orcs aside with impunity. Atherogate couldn't suppress a laugh as he rolled over the wall, drew his morning stars, and rushed to join Brunner. An orc flopped atop Thibbledorf Puent's head, impaled by the long helmet spike. It wasn't yet dead, and the dwarf berserker wasn't doing anything to finish it, except hopping all around, and each jolting movement had the orc writhing and howling in agony. Up beside Brunner, Atherogate swatted an ogre, sending it tumbling over the far rail to splash into the river below.
"Bwahaha!" he howled,
but he bit it short, seeing the blood pouring from Brunner's throat. Brunner was still singing, or rather gurgling, and certainly still fighting, though how he hadn't fallen over dead, Atherogate did not know, for surely the wound would prove mortal.
"Pile heavy the stones! To warm me bones!"
Over in the west, dwarven cheering was mitigated only by the pained screams and terror of the orcs. King Conorat and General Dagnabbit and their charges saw their famed gutbusters and the legendary King Brunner take and quickly secure the Cerbron Bridge, effectively bottlenecking half the enemy forces across the river. And the orcs saw it, too, and saw, too, or heard at least, the rout in the north as King Emerus of Citadel Felbar made his fierce push southward. They all knew it to be Emerus then, as the pennants of proud Felbar came into view, inexorably closing on the orc force like the jaws of a great wolf.
"Take it to 'em, boys," King Conorat cried, running the length of the line. "They got nowhere to run, and just enough ground for fallen dead."
"Huzzah!" 1,000 dwarves cheered in reply, and the orcs began to die. For all the cheering and the renewed hope, those dwarves who understood the tactical layout of the armies around Mithril Hall expected that the worst was yet to come. The largest Many Arrows force was yet to show up on the field, they feared. What King Conorad's boys didn't know was that the largest orc force was already engaged in battle, far to the north, around the side of the mountain. Circling up near the darkening, far above the battlefields, Drizzt chewed his lip nervously. he saw the vast orc force awaken and stretch to the southeast, rolling around the mountain as they rushed to join in the fighting at the Cerberan Bridge, and the fighting now raging north of the bridge, where King Emerus's force had met the earlier orc arrivals from the north. And Drizzt saw the dark outline of King Harnoth's responding charge, the thousands of shield dwarves of Citadel Adbar rolling down upon the unsuspecting horde. Even from this height, Drizzt could make out the initial shape of the battle. The Many Arrows force turning southeast was being led by the goblins and orcs, mostly, leaving the larger ogres and giants as the rear guard, as was typical of their tactics. In this instance, however, with King Harnoth's thousands charging in from the other direction and creating an unexpected second front, that put the behemoths at the front of the battle, and that, Drizzt could see, was not a place they wanted to be. From this vantage, Harnoth's charge appeared like a black avalanche, and when it hit the darkness of the enemy line, it looked as if it had picked up huge trees to carry forward through the orc morass as the giants fled just ahead of the collision. The Many Arrows horde stopped its southeastern movement quickly and tried to turn around, but from the dark outline of the battle, Drizzt could see that the dwarves had driven into the sea of enemies before any organized defenses or formations could be put in place. By the inevitable point at which the fierce battle became a chaotic jumble of individual struggles, King Harnoth had clearly gained the upper hand. Drizzt nodded hopefully. Despite the fact that his friends were battling at the bridge in the south, this was the most important fight. With that thought, he turned his eye back the other way, and far to the south, Drizzt saw the magical wall of fire brighten the length of the Cerberan Bridge, and he smiled and was afraid all at once. He knew that Catti Bree had come onto the field in all her glory. "Trust in her," he whispered to himself, the words lost in the wind. He had to do that, to trust in Catti Bree and in Brunner. His focus had to be here, in this moment, in this situation. And what a moment it was for Drizzt, flying around on the back of a dragon. He couldn't wait to get down and into the action, and couldn't wait to see the power of Tazmakella and her sister unleashed on the Many Arrows hordes, though at the same time he surely held great trepidations about such power bared. He had thought that the dragons would strike the first blow on the orcs before Harnoth's legions had joined in with them in the confusion of battle. But no, it was not to be, Tazmakella had informed him. They had other plans. Watching the unfolding swarms of the armies far below, Drizzt took heart. He couldn't be sure, but it appeared to him that the flotilla attack on the Cerberan Bridge had been executed well, and that Brunner's force was still holding strong. His heart leaped when he saw a fireball fly from near the center of the bridge to erupt amidst the hordes of monsters on the eastern shoreline. And through the darkness, he could clearly see a towering fire elemental wreaking havoc at the eastern end of the bridge. Catti Bree still stood strong. King Emerus's force continued its push south, and King Conorad was holding strong in front of the eastern gate of Mithril Hall. So far, at least, this battle was playing out exactly as they had drawn it up. Tazmakella banked sharply, then with one turn flew back for the south and climbed into the lower levels of the darkening, obscuring the view.
"What?"
Drizzt called to her, but the dragon paid him no heed. As they came below the roiling blackness for one instant, Drizzt noted Ilnazara and Afafrenfir similarly rising into the black. The drow held on tightly, confused, until the dragon dipped again, and it all came clear with the shriek of another dragon, not Tazmakella or her sister. The far-distant Many Arrows orcs lifted their arms in a cheer as two white monsters soared through the skies to join in the fighting, flying fast from the south. Tazmakella and Ilnazara flew swiftly south to intercept. The white dragons were far below, their focus clearly on the battle as they approached, and Drizzt held his breath. It seemed as though one would fly right across the Cerberan Bridge. Perhaps the white dragons wouldn't look up until it was too late. The water streamed from his lavender eyes again as Tazmakella gained speed. He had to duck his head low when she began her sudden descent from on high, the wind crackling around her leathery wings. He managed to glance over to see Afafrenfir similarly crouched as Ilnazara mirrored Tazmakella's dive.
"Hold your hearts, boys, and hold your ground," Brunner yelled from the eastern end of the bridge, a call that was carried back to the other side, where Bungalow Thump led half the force in defending the western edge. Indeed, it was an important call at that moment, for every dwarf on the bridge and all the monsters on either end saw the approach of the speeding white dragon and its drow rider aiming right for the heart of those dwarves that had cut the orc forces in half. "Girl!" Brunner yelled to Catti Bree, who was not on the bridge, but rather levitated up beside it, holding one of the ropes that had been thrown over the stone railing. "We're needin' ye, girl!" Up above the railing, her eyes fixed on the south, Catti Bree was too engaged with her spellcasting to even hear Brunner's call. She saw the worm, it couldn't be missed, and she knew what she needed to do. All around the bridge in front of her, dwarf priests and priestesses rushed around, casting protection spells on the greatest dwarven fighters, or on any who were close enough. But it wouldn't be enough. The dragon closed, orc cheers rising. They clearly expected the dwarves to be swept from the bridge. The worm soared in low, dwarves dropping to the stone below the railings, and it breathed its frosty, killing breath. And at that moment, a fireball erupted in the air right in front of the worm, and the frosty breath burst through it as a wash of rain and nothing more. And the dragon burst through it, coming out the other side steaming and smoking, its white face red and angry as if it had flown too close to the sun. The disoriented worm didn't even drop its claws to rake free a few dwarves as it flashed over the structure, and instead banked sharply to the northwest, wings beating furiously to gain height. She had caught it by surprise, Catti Bree knew, much as she had done to the other, much larger white dragon by the cliff wall on the ledge above Keeper's Dale. She had surprised it, and she had stung it, and she had defeated its pass. But she hadn't defeated the worm, not at all, and now it was aware of her. The woman searched her magical repertoire for some trick that might fend off the inevitable next attack, but her options seemed painfully thin. "Hold faith and fight on," Brunner roared, and the gutbusters roared in echo, and then they all began to sing. "We speak with hammer, axe, and maul. We call to gods in Mordin's hall. We stand our ground, await our fall, for then we'll know the grandest feast." But the song didn't hold, broken apart by shrieks and shouts that alarmed the woman until she turned her expectant gaze to the northwest. And there, she, the dwarves, and the orcs all saw the white dragon turning desperately, trying to be out of the way of a pair of diving copper worms. Catti Bree's heart soared when she saw the silver line of a magical arrow reach ahead of one of those copper-colored dragons, an arrow shot from a bow she had carried for many years. So excited was she that her next spell came screaming to her lips and tingling from her fingertips, a lightning bolt that crackled to the eastern riverbank beside the bridge buttress, laying low a host of orcs and ogres. Drizzt fought with all his strength, his body muscles and his legs straining to hold him in place as he leveled Talmaril at the white dragon and particularly at its drow rider. He got one shot off and another, but then threw himself flat and held on for all his life as Tazmakella soared into the white worm, breathing forth a magical cloud as she clipped the vulnerable worm with bone-shattering force. Tazmakella spun away, rolling from the impact, and Drizzt held on all the tighter, stunned by the sheer speed of the pass and by the sheer violence of the impact. He felt small indeed in that moment, small and mortal, and caught in the battle between two beings infinitely more powerful than he. He did manage to turn his head back in time to see Ilnazara's even more brutal collision. The white dragon, overbalanced by Tazmakella's pass, couldn't properly align itself to mitigate the blow, or the acidic breath that preceded it. Drizzt thought he heard the crunch of bone with the white's wing bent up awkwardly, or perhaps he had just mentally filled in the sound that surely emanated from that crash. Ilnazara shot by, the white spinning wildly in her wake. By the time he tore his gaze from that spectacle, Drizzt noted that they were much lower, near the ground, and Tazmakella turned her long neck upward, twisting her spine against the plummet, her great leathery wings catching the updraft and leveling her out. Over the bridge they soared, to cheering dwarves and to a sight,
Catibri and Brunner, that warmed Drizzt's heart. The sight brought him back to the present situation. He took up his bow and strafed the eastern riverbank as Tasmakella soared along. He saw one orc tumble and one giant lurch, but he had no idea how many of his uncounted shots might have scored a hit. It didn't matter anyway. One or two or even 10 enemies wouldn't make a difference. But the mere appearance of a death-dealing dragon with a drow rider fighting against many arrows had great effect indeed on both sides of the battle. Tasmakella banked west and climbed once more, and Drizzt steadied himself, trying to reorient his thinking to this new and higher level of speed and violence. Far ahead but closing rapidly loomed the white dragon, somehow still aloft and screeching, perhaps in pain, perhaps in rage. Its movement seemed slower, though, and Drizzt recalled Tasmakella's breath cloud, one knot of acid. Tasmakella climbed northwest, Ilnazara southwest, flanking their enemy. Both turned sharply in unison, soaring in from opposite directions. The white met Ilnazara's charge with a breath of frost, and Drizzt winced for Efafrenfir, but both Tasmakella and Ilnazara responded with acid spits, burning and biting at their enemy, and at the unfortunate drow riding the white. For a heartbeat, Drizzt thought the copper dragons were going to crash together against the opposite sides of the white, and the drow cried out in terror, for neither slowed. But these sisters were well practiced, and at the same time they flopped into barrel rolls, Tasmakella going over, Ilnazara under, and so close that Drizzt nearly bumped heads with the white dragon's rider, a drow he recognized as Tosin Armgo. Drizzt had just managed to catch the rhythm of that sudden roll when Tasmakella broke out of it, the momentum so suddenly reversed that the drow ranger slammed his face down on the dragon's shoulders and nearly swooned. Back to the north, flying level, came Tasmakella to engage the battered white again. Drizzt tried to shake his dizziness away, tried to put up his bow, but a shriek from behind had him turning back to the south to see another white dragon, far away but flying fast. This one was much larger, bigger than Tasmakella by far, bigger than Ilnazara by far, bigger than both together, it seemed. Drizzt forced himself to turn away, to look ahead, where the other white worm fluttered on ragged, burned wings, trying to turn aside. It flew at Tasmakella, but Drizzt noted her course and believed she was but a distraction now, diverting the white's attention. The ranger got off a shot with Talmaril, the arrow streaking past the worm and its rider. As Drizzt expected, Tasmakella veered back to the east. But then she caught the white dragon, its rider, and Drizzt by surprise, as she suddenly reversed direction and leaped more than flew against the white. They became a tangle of raking claws and biting maws, beating wings and slapping tails, turning and rolling and ultimately tumbling. In the frenzy, Drizzt didn't know if he should draw his scimitars or simply hold on. He saw Tosin on one turn, the drow burned by acid, his cloak trailing smoke, but with sword in hand. Drizzt fired off an arrow. He missed his target, Tosin, but the magical arrow stabbed at the white dragon's flank, though if it even noticed in the frenzy of greater weapons and wounds, Drizzt did not know. On it went, and now Drizzt could only hold on desperately. Then the worms broke the clench, both together kicking out with their hind legs, throwing each other aside. Tasmakella straightened almost immediately and climbed furiously. Looking back at the new worm, much closer now, Drizzt could certainly understand why. He lifted his bow for one last shot, but pulled it back in shock as a much larger missile slammed into the first foe. Ilnazara drove down upon it from above, full force. The white dragon went spinning away, Ilnazara in determined pursuit. Tasmakella didn't join in, though. The much larger white continued to close in on her.
"Urban grass!" Orothiter growled. Tiago felt the rumble in his legs as much as he heard the dragon's call. That was Orothiter's son, the drow knew, spinning out with gruesome wounds and with a copper dragon close behind. "Stay on this one!" the drow warrior cried. "This is Drizzt O'Erden, the greatest treasure. When he is dead, Lady Lolth will be in our debt."
The old white death swung his head to the left to watch the flight of his son, and Tiago pleaded desperately. So close, he could see Drizzt on the back of the other copper, directly in front of him, white hair and green cape flying.
It was Drizzt. Of course it was Drizzt. So close. She will gain height and plummet upon your son, Tiago screamed. You must catch her.
Erothiter snaked his great head all the way around to stare his rider in the face, and for a heartbeat, Tiago surely thought his life was at its end.
You think I care for the fate of Orbengras? The dragon said. He failed, and so he will die.
The white dragon's head swiveled back around as he lined up with the fleeing copper worm, his great leathery wings beating with tremendous power. Tiago glanced at the wounded and desperately fleeing Orbengras and chuckled at the absence of familial affection. Erothiter would make a good matron mother.
We will kill this one and its rider, and the other will lead us to her treasures, Erothiter explained.
Tiago held on for all his life as the dragon gained speed with every great pump of his wings. They were flying at a steep angle toward the darkening, flying upward, but from the mounting velocity, it seemed more to Tiago as if they were diving. At first, he thought the copper worm would make it into the roiling blackness in the sky above, but now he was not so sure of that. Neither was the copper dragon, Tiago realized. She turned around suddenly and dived back the way she had come, flying straight for Erothiter. Tiago's eyes widened with surprise and then with fear, and widened more when a steady stream of silvery arrows came flying forth from Drizzt, soaring down at him and his mount. Erothiter didn't flinch, didn't turn, and didn't slow, and in a heartbeat he had no time to turn, the worms speeding together. Tiago braced and sucked in his breath. He knew he was about to die, was certain he could not survive the collision. He brought his shield up at the last moment, the powerfully enchanted buckler blocking an arrow that would have laid him low. Then a second and a third thumped against the barrier, and it didn't matter to Tiago. He knew that the crush of the worms would surely kill him anyway.
Be quick!
Brother Afafrenfir whispered to his dragon mount, though he knew Ilnazara, speeding along, couldn't hear him, and knew she didn't have to. The monk glanced back to see the huge white soaring upward in pursuit of Tasmakella and Drizzt. Up ahead of Ilnazara, Afafrenfir noted the uneven movements of the badly wounded smaller white dragon, tattered wings flapping wildly as the worm tried to keep level and upright. The white worm couldn't seem to turn, for it flew straight for the higher reaches of the great mountain that housed Mithril Hall. On the dragon's back, the drow rider tugged left and right frantically, as if trying to force the dragon to bank this way or that. He might as well have been trying to move the mountain. Afafrenfir heard his mount chanting, casting a spell. A couple of heartbeats later, a volley of blue-green glowing bolts of arcane energy shot forth from Ilnazara, flying faster than dragon flight, swerving around the white dragon's waving tail. But what good would such minor spells be against the power of a dragon? And then they crossed the last expanse to stab into the drow rider. He winced and hunched, clearly in pain, and looked back, cursing in a language Afafrenfir did not know. He held forth his hand and called upon his own magical powers, and a globe of darkness appeared in the air right in front of Ilnazara. The monk ducked reflexively, but he needn't have bothered. The dragon flew through the darkness in an instant, emerging out the other side. Up came the monk, back steady in his seat, and confused that the drow would even bother to attempt something that feeble, until he realized what it was. It was desperation, blind desperation, and a scream against impotence. The mountain loomed huge now. Up ahead, the white dragon did manage to turn a bit to the right, to the north, and was about to slam head-on into a rocky outcropping. At the last instant, the white just barely lifted up over that jut of stone. Ilnazara cut a turn that had Afafrenfir's face twisting under the strain. He kept his gaze aimed at the rocky outcropping, though, and saw beyond it now to the fleeing white dragon, which had crashed into a sloping face of deep snow and skidded along, digging deep grooves and piling the white stuff up in front of its chest, trying to gain some semblance of control. On its back, the drow worked frantically and screamed continually, and so he should. The dragon flipped over the snowbank as it had piled, tumbling wildly, and when it came over, no rider could be seen. Like an avalanche, the white worm rolled, spinning around, its wings twisting and snapping and sticking out at unnatural angles. Right to another rocky jut it skidded, crashing against that one hard and awkwardly, and settling there. "I will finish it," Afa Frenfir yelled to his mount. "Go to your sister!" In response, Ilnazara swerved right up near to the cliff, above where the white had crashed. There the monk leaped for the stone. As Ilnazara veered up and away, Brother Afa Frenfir, infused with the knowledge of Grandmaster Kane, half fell, half ran down the sheer rocky cliff, his hands and feet working in a controlled blur to continually break and so control his fall. He came down onto the snowy slope moments later. He glanced back to a black spot near the first rocky jut, to the twisted form of the drow rider, but the dragon was the greater danger. Afa Frenfir paid the drow no more heed and sprinted the other way toward the twisted form of the white dragon. But the worm wasn't dead, and as he neared, the great horned head whipped around and lifted up high, towering over the monk, who looked very tiny indeed. A collective gasp escaped the orcs and their allies when the white dragon smashed upon the mountain high above.
"Enough, Jarl," Feloki said to his leader.
Jarl Orelson shook his head as he looked around. In front of him, Mithril Hall's eastern gate lay open, but an army of stubborn dwarves would allow no passage. Behind him, his allies had been locked away from the fight. The defense of the bridge would not falter. In the north, the dwarves were winning. In the sky, the dragon allies of the dwarves were winning. Jarl Orelson nodded at the frost giant warrior they called Boomer.
"Collect ours," he said.
And Feloki nodded grimly and began gathering up the giants of shining white. And when they were gathered together around their Jarl, he led them away to the south, their long legs taking them far from the battlefield with every stride, easily outpacing those orcs and goblins who thought to similarly flee. The war had ended for Shining White, Jarl Orelson had decided. It was time to go home. At the Cerberan Bridge, the cheering heightened as the white dragon went crashing into the mountain.
"Hold strong, boys!"
Brunner yelled, and he swatted aside another orc before he crunched yet another's ugly face with his shield as it tried to shoulder him aside. Brunner Battlehammer would not be moved. The dwarves were holding, and the press from the eastern bank was thinning. All was going as they had planned, indeed as they had desperately hoped when they had planned. The cheering reflected that from all but one. Catty Bree couldn't take her gaze from the dark sky far above, where the huge white flew into a swarm of silvery arrows. Even from so far away, Catty Bree could see that the dragons were about to collide at full speed so far above the ground.
"My love," she whispered in farewell.